Media versus Commonwealth, Mr. Meyer. You'll have 15 minutes. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Please, Your Honor. May I reserve 5 minutes?
Absolutely.
Outstanding. May it please the Court, I'm Andrew Meyer, court-appointed trial counsel, and obviously counsel for appeal for Mr. Garcia in this matter, who was unfortunately convicted of 19-2, violations of 19-2, 82.1 and 18-2-186, and we're here on our assignment error that double jeopardy was implicated in both those convictions. I think it's helpful in starting this argument to note what the courts have held in Woodfin, holding that the same transaction or occurrence is synonymous with the same criminal episode. In other words, two offenses arise in the same transaction or occurrence if they're connected so closely in the time, place, and circumstances that a complete account of one charge cannot be related without relating to details of the other charge. That's precisely what's at issue here. The charges essentially stem from three facts. Mr. Garcia was stopped. Mr. Garcia gave a name and date of birth, and the name and date of birth wasn't his.
If you apply the Blockburger test, what are the results?
We would argue that the appellate would pass the Blockburger test, that the results would be the same, because the elements, well, worded a little differently, get you to the same place. As I note, the elements for a false ID to an LEO, which is 82.1, falsely identifying oneself to a law enforcement officer with the intent to deceive after being lawfully detained, requested, and to identify oneself by the officer. Now, conversely, if we look at the identity theft, which it's important to note that the title is false representations to obtain property or credit, that's the title of the applicable code, the elements are simply using the identifying information of another to avoid summons, arrest, prosecution, or impede a criminal investigation. So the appellant's position is that the elements for 82.1 might be broken down to 4 or 5. They're the same as the elements for identity theft, which is simply broken down to 2.
Do you have to lie to a police officer for it to be identity theft?
Yes. The appellant would argue because to avoid
some... That's an element of identity.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Your Honor, because I would say that it would be to avoid a summons, arrest, prosecution, or impede a criminal investigation, which would necessitate a law enforcement officer involvement.
Let me give you the following example, if I may, that was given to me by someone much wiser than am I. You can violate 186.3b1 if you give, say, a law enforcement officer at a store an improper identity to avoid being charged or arrested or having an investigation for concealment, but that wouldn't implicate 82.1, would it?
It would.
Because they're not a law enforcement officer. They're privately employed.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then I think I misunderstood.
A loss prevention officer.
Oh, loss prevention officer.
Yes, say at Walmart.
In terms of possibly a citizen's arrest, I see Your Honor's point.
Well, it's an employee of the store who's charged with preventing loss.
But then, are you really avoiding summons, arrest, prosecution, repeated?
Absolutely, you are.
But then, in Your Honor's example, the loss prevention officer doesn't have the authority to make an arrest. And if you had the authority to make an arrest, then by definition, you're a police officer. But that being said,
But where does 186.3 require that it be simply an arrest? Because it's to avoid summons, arrest, prosecution, or to impede in a criminal investigation. It's not the conjunctive, it's the disjunctive.
It is the disjunctive, but you can't have one without the other. But even if we can see the Blockburger test...
You don't have to be arrested to be charged with a violation. A summons can be issued.
And that's that is part and parcel of the elements to both.
You don't have to be arrested to be investigated.
True.
This is simply to impede a criminal investigation.
True. But Blockbuster's not the be-all, end-all. We have to look at legislative intent. And the courts have been very clear that Blockberger is not the sole test here. And we look at Andrews and we look at Schmidt others that we look at the legislative intent, whether it's clear. If the General Assembly intended a unit of prosecution for each offense. And Andrews states affirmatively, quote, "Thus, while Blockberger can provide an efficient mechanism to parse statutory language in order to determine the legislator's intent with regard to whether multiple punishments are permitted for the conduct chargeable under more than one code section, it is not the sole, or in many cases, the primary tool of statutory construction that is used to determine intent." And that's precisely the case here. And this is very much, as Andrews quotes Garrett, the Blockberger rule, if the legislative intent is clear from the face of the statute or legislative history, Blockberger is not controlling. And that's what I referred to before when we look at the statutes 186.3 and 82.1. The identity theft is primarily for financial crimes or obtaining profit, which goes into one of the arguments that the appellee makes with Giorgio of the Commonwealth. I'm killing the name, but George with a G-H starting. Where they hold
that right. That was my case earlier.
So oh, great. where they held that identity theft and credit card theft are two distinct crimes and thus punishable in a single proceeding. But I might be going into very dark and dangerous waters here in this argument with Your Honor. It's my understanding that the issue with that case was the crimes were distinct because you had the identity theft and then the use of the information of the card. So they were able to distinguish that, much like they could in cases, I believe it's like Holly, or most of the cases that deal with double jeopardy, period, murder, where there are distinct crimes, such as felony murder and
to follow up on Judge Atlee's question, I don't know how Georgiou would cause a different result when you're looking at these two statutes to see whether there's a different element under, say, a Blockberger analysis. Would it?
I would say that the identity theft involved the compromise of the identity itself, and then the credit card theft was committed by actually using that compromised information to obtain money or properties, and then you look at the amount of the goods taken. And that actually follows back. If we look at 186.3, then we look at the units of punishment where it's broken down, and the General Assembly looks and says, well, if it's an amount in this amount, at over 2,500, I believe, class 6 felony. If it involves 50 more people, there's a different unit of punishment. And if there's a second or subsequent offense, different units of punishment. But we look at the titling of the code section itself, it's to obtain monies or property.
But Virginia law says you don't look to the title.
Well, my counter to that is the Virginia law is one body of law, and that cannot be read in isolation. And we look at the intent and what's said, and even if we concede, all right, let's not even look at the title, let's look at what they say.
Look at what the elements of the offense are and what the intent of the General Assembly was can be determined through the elements of the offense.
They can also be determined through the units of prosecution or the units of punishment, and that's our argument here, that if we look at the 186 units of punishment, it's all tied to monies or properties and values or the amount of people that's involved. And if we look at this case,
I think you're making the government's case for them there. You're talking about one being dealing with financial and the other totally dealing with giving a false identity law enforcement.
Oh, our position is that those statements are legislative intent, that they don't mean for that code section to apply merely to saying a false ID to a law enforcement officer. Because either way, If I say my name is Daffy Duck to anybody, that could potentially be a crime. And then two, if it's a law enforcement officer, and that's certainly not what the legislator intended, and it's certainly the same transaction or occurrence that would create improper or cumulative punishments. And again, we look at to wrap it up, to reserve rebuttal time, the types of punishments and the unit of punishments shows on its face what the legislative intent was in creating that crime and what that crime is punishing, the activity that it's punishing. And with 186.3, it's more for theft. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you. Ms. Campbell.
Off to a good start, Your Honor.
That's okay. You recovered it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. The trial court in this case correctly found that the two statutes at issue have different elements. They each contain an element that the other does not, and therefore neither could be a lesser included for the other. Because of this, the prosecution under both statutes stemming from the same act or transaction does not violate the Double Jeopardy Clause. Here, where the defendant is challenging something, convictions obtained in a single trial, we look at the issue of multiple punishments for the same offense. When we look at that in that scenario, our concern is that the defendant is not being twice sentenced for something greater than the legislator intended. And we don't look at the specific facts of the case. We look at the statutes themselves. When you look at the statutes in this case, it's clear each contains an element the other does not. As this court has already discussed, the identity theft statute requires that you actually use someone else's identifying information. And the 19.282.1 requires that you actually you are falsely identifying yourself to a police officer. Not to get too clever with the court, but in answering another version of the hypothetical, how could you violate 186.3 without talking to a police officer? That is only prohibiting, or not only prohibiting, but that is prohibiting you from using identification documents of another person to avoid summons, arrest, or prosecution. A criminal could simply use my information to hide from police to avoid arrest or summons without ever interacting with a police officer by using someone's other identifying information to basically go undercover and not exist as one person anymore in order to avoid, an arrest warrant or any other summons. So there's many different ways to violate that statute without ever coming into contact with a police officer to violate it. And obviously, 19.282.1, you must falsely identify yourself to a police officer. Therefore, because they clearly are not the same offense under the Blockberger test, the Commonwealth is not required to prove the same elements when prosecuting identity theft and providing a false identity to a law enforcement officer. There's simply no double jeopardy issue here. And if the court has no further questions, the Commonwealth will ask that you affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell. Mr. Meyer.
She's off to a great start.
Mr. Meyer, let me go back to my previous hypothetical and maybe do a little twist on it. Let's say a random person, I don't know, Wesley Russell, is shopping at Walmart, steals a couple of DVDs. He's detained by loss prevention, to whom he gives the name Marla Decker. He's doing that to try to avoid investigation into him or avoid prosecution of him. Now, that's clearly a violation of 186.3b1. Now, let's also say that just a few steps away happens to be a police officer. The police officer comes, intervenes in what's going on, and at that point, Mr. Russell doubles down on it and gives the same false identification information to the law enforcement officer. Why then couldn't he be charged with 186.3b1 for what he told the loss prevention officer, and then 82.1 for what he told the law enforcement officer?
Because simply the loss prevention officer doesn't have the statutory authority to conduct a criminal investigation. doesn't have the statutory authority.
Isn't that what they do every day? Is investigate people for theft at their store?
People do things every day that are against the law. I'm just trying to figure out
how that's against the law.
Because they conduct an investigation into something that is private, that could be a civil matter or not.
Could be a criminal matter, because then they just make a call to the police if they're satisfied that someone has just stolen from their store, and the police follow up and do their own investigation or something that may or may not result in an arrest.
I think the answer could be found that once this issue is prosecuted, a police officer can prosecute if it's a misdemeanor. The loss prevention officer cannot prosecute. The loss prevention officer, at best, would be a witness, and somebody would have to step in and prosecute. So, they might be charged by their corporate overlord, for lack of a better term, to perform said duties, but that does not create any presumption that they can conduct a legitimate criminal investigation, issue a summons, or conduct a prosecution.
So you're essentially saying that judicially we need to write into 186.3b1 that they don't say law enforcement officer, but that's what they mean.
It's certainly implied, and I think it's fair. Because if we look at what this court said in Schmidt earlier this year, that, quote, this inquiry curtails the possibility that courts will succumb to the conclusion that any differentiation in language defining the elements of an offense would authorize multiple punishments of otherwise undifferentiated conduct. Again, we just had three actions, and even in Your Honor's example, it's the same conduct. It might be worded differently, but we can't get to a criminal investigation without some statutory authority to conduct a criminal investigation. We can't get to a prosecution without some statutory authority to be able to conduct a prosecution.
To follow up on Judge Atlee's question, what about if a bank was investigating some sort of money that has disappeared, embezzlement or something related to that, and they're working with the police, but the person really tracing the money and doing the investigation is internal for the bank, and they come up with person A, and person A says, oh, that isn't me. I'm not person A, I'm person B. And they give the wrong name to that person to try to throw them off the trail. They're not a police officer, but wouldn't that be a violation still under 18.2-186? 3B1?
I understand where the court's going, but I would still argue no, because they don't have the authority. Now, there could be some instances where it gets so joint, for instance, like some DSS investigations are conducted jointly with law enforcement, and that's certainly a case, I'd have to concede this to the court, that's certainly a case that kind of blows my argument a little bit, puts a chink in the armor. But again, why would the main argument here is not necessarily blockbuster looking at the elements, it's looking at the legislative intent. And if we look at exactly the conduct that 186.3 tries to prohibit, it's not just giving a false name per se, it's giving a false name to obtain goods, monies, or services, and we can see that once we go through A, B, C, and so on, and what the appropriate units of punishment. With that, I thank the court for its time, unless there are any other questions, which I don't think there would be.
Okay, we're going to-